You are listening to a sermon by Nick Sherman, recorded on Sunday, July 21st, 2024, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, I appreciate the invitation to be here and share. As has been shared, I live in Yarrow, as it's also known at this time of year, the long line of cars headed to Cultus Lake. And we have family in Richmond and Vancouver, so we're out this way fairly often, and actually came yesterday afternoon and stayed over. So coming in from Richmond this morning. My wife, Meg, is a social worker. She works with Fraser Valley Child Development Center, and I am an assortment of things. So I'm a pastor by background and training, as well as a printmaker. In my spare time, when I have spare time, I make block prints, and I made one for you folks today. You can see it there as a little gift, and there's copies. You can take one or two on your way out as well, based on the lectionary readings. So. And something I enjoy doing. The thing I do most of right now, though, is work with MCC. So I've been with Mennonite Central Committee for almost 3 years now, working with their local homelessness prevention and outreach program. That program, you may know, provides material supports for people, such as meals and clothing. And it also includes something which I help run called the Rent Bank. The Rent Bank assists people who are at risk of eviction, primarily through interest-free loans. And we also support people who are actively unhoused, providing some financial assistance to help get into housing. It's important work, and I'm very grateful to be part of it. It's also, as you can imagine, challenging. The text I've chosen for this morning, as we've heard, is the gospel reading from today's lectionary selections. Comes to us from the Markan account of Jesus's life. At first glance, this reading might seem a little bit disjointed. It includes two short sections of text from the middle and end of chapter 6. Omitted are the accounts that fall in between, the feeding of the 5,000 and Jesus walking on water. The verses we've just heard read focus on the perspective of Jesus and his disciples as they go about their ministry here. It would seem that those drafting the lectionary readings wanted to center their perspective for us, particularly how they related to the crowds of people who sought out Jesus. The reading begins with the disciples coming to Jesus after some time away and reporting to him what they've been doing and teaching. And after they shared with him, Jesus tells them to come to a deserted place and rest a while. Mark writes that many people had been coming and going, and because of this, the disciples had no leisure even to eat. No leisure even to eat. We know that as word about Jesus spread, more and more people were drawn to him and his companions. And as a result of all this attention, the demands of their work and witness had become such that they barely had time to stop for a meal. Our Rent Bank program receives between 80 and 100 applications per month. Last year, we dispersed over $250,000 in assistance, impacting 550 people facing eviction in the Fraser Valley. Those numbers are increasing, with almost $200,000 in support being provided in the first half of this year alone. With the rental market, as you know, and cost of living being what they are, the need and the program continue to grow. We'll actually be launching a new rent bank, based out of Prince George, for all of Central and Northern BC as well, run by MCC this fall. I am, as I've said, grateful to be part of this work. I can also tell you that we're often very, very busy, particularly at the end and start of the month when rent is due. There's a lot of days when, like Jesus' disciples in this account, I have no leisure even to eat. We might be just around the corner from the first, or short-staffed, or handling a spike in applications due to a press release or a community-wide crisis. On days like those, I might dine at my desk, or I'm somewhat ashamed to admit, I make do with coffee and a granola bar or not eat at all. We are, of course, encouraged to take care of ourselves. I'm supported in that regard. But when applications keep coming and people are distressed and highly anxious about the prospect of becoming homeless, it's difficult. It can feel like the crowds that Mark describes here that keep coming and pressing in, seeking healing and a word of truth. Compared to the other synoptics and to John, the book of Mark moves and moves quickly. The prose is verb heavy. The word immediately is used over 40 times in the gospel, transitioning readers rapidly from one scene to another. There's a sense of urgency and purpose as we follow Jesus around in his work here. We see that in our reading. Mark is a gospel, we might say, that's well suited for frontline workers. At a certain point, though, you need to stop. Jesus knew that for his disciples to carry on with their work, they needed to be able to step away from that work. Pausing their efforts and recovering for a while would allow them to do that work more well. And so he bids them to do so. Come to a deserted place and rest a while, he tells them. Mark writes that they board a boat. A decision may be something like turning off one's work phone. A boat was the only way they could cut loose from the masses. And so they push off from shore and start paddling in search of a place to have lunch. Which is a fine plan, a good plan, except the crowds do not relent. Other people catch sight of Jesus, recognize him, and go on ahead of him to see him. All hope of a quiet break is gone when Jesus and his disciples find the crowds waiting for them on the other side of the water. When I'm able to leave my office space and spend half an hour in the lunchroom, there's still times like that. Someone will show up at the front desk in crisis, or a time-sensitive call will come through. The reception staff are always apologetic, but sometimes no one else is around. And some things simply cannot wait, or should not have to wait for that matter. If someone has walked through the snow in socks and shows up asking for shoes, or is overdosed in the parking lot, or is sobbing in the hallway, my lunch is less important. I go. And I'd like to think that I'm responding dutifully and lovingly when that happens. If I'm going to be very honest with you, though, I need to tell you that there are times when I find myself resentful, frustrated that I can't get a bit of rest even after trying to row to the other end of the building, as it were. Irked to have to put my lunch away again. And it's because of that reaction within me that I find Jesus's reaction here so interesting and so incredibly compelling. Mark tells his readers that despite yet another bunch of people showing up and crashing his retreats, Jesus did not look at them with annoyance or anger. Jesus was not bitter. He didn't tell them to go away or set an appointment with his administrative assistant and come back later. Instead, Mark writes that as Jesus went ashore, he saw the great crowds and he had compassion on them, like they were a sheep without a shepherd. Jesus saw the great crowds and had compassion on them. I don't know what your lives look like. I don't know what kind of lines of work or service are represented by those gathered here and participating from elsewhere. I don't know what sorts of relationships you find yourself in. I don't know, but I would guess that there are probably people who come to you with their needs. It might be children if you're at the stage of life our family is in. There are the demands of students, clients, and coworkers, or perhaps it's a parent, a partner, or a friend who asks something of you. And this is nothing to say, of course, of the needs presented to us in our neighborhoods, communities, and news feeds. We aspire to care, you and I, with as much tenderness, dignity, and self-giving concern as we're able. And most days we can. But there are also days when we're spent, and it feels like we're interacting with the crowds in these verses, when it's so much, and you've not even had a chance to feed yourself. And even when you try, somebody interrupts you again and asks for something else. I'm not Jesus, of course, and neither are you. If I'm situated anywhere in these stories, it's among the multitudes who flock to Jesus with their questions and desires, or in the company of his determined and yet worn down disciples. We're human. If you read the whole of chapter 6 here, you'd see that the disciples are very human as well. They struggle to match the level of compassion that Jesus demonstrated. Jesus, we're told, kept on teaching on that other side of the lake. And he continues with this until it's late in the day. The disciples eventually pull him aside and in a whisper beg him to send the people away. Let them go, they tell Jesus, so that they can go to the nearby towns and buy something to eat. It seems like a perfectly reasonable suggestion, right? Jesus, you may recall, says no. Instead, he tells his disciples to find something for all of those gathered there on the grass. The disciples, as you might expect, are incredulous. Not only have they missed out on lunch, they're now stuck at work late, past dinner, and have been given an assignment by their superior to figure out a way to feed several thousand people. The disciples are weary and hungry, and we've been there some days as well ourselves. And yet Jesus continues to call them and us into a life of radical service rooted in compassion and trust. In opening themselves up to compassion and trusting, the disciples are able to participate in the miracle of provision in which both they and the crowds are fed. They took what little they had and what little they had left that day, and in yielding it to Christ, tasted God's sustaining power. And after everything they went through that day, there were, at the end, 12 baskets of bread and fish left over. Jesus saw the crowd and had compassion on them. You may know that the word for compassion here literally means to be moved, quote unquote, as to one's bowels, which might seem strange to us. But in the same way that we today would associate the heart with affection, people in Jesus' day would have understood the bowels to be the seat of love and pity. It's a notion that's carried over in some ways when we talk about feeling something in our stomach or our gut. When we experience compassion for another, we're moved, and often physically so. I felt this when hearing someone recounts their trauma to me over their phone while completing an application for a loan, or when helping serve food for the folks living in the encampments. You come to see the other person with a kind of loving clarity and allow something of their suffering in. Compassion moves us. It moves us internally, and it moves us towards the other into action. There are a number of times, you may know, in the Gospels where Jesus is said to have been moved with compassion. In each of those instances, it's followed by what he does for those people in response. Jesus has compassion for people he reads, and in response, he teaches and feeds and heals them. The Good Samaritan in the parable, when he's moved with compassion, stops and bandages up the wounded traveler. And the father in the other parable is moved with compassion for his prodigal child who had returned, and in response runs to embrace him. Compassion moves us. It moves us to turn toward the other when we might otherwise want to turn away or turn them away. Compassion is a kind of tender recognition. It allows me to see that I might feel a little bit hungry at the end of a hectic shift, but the reality is that I have food with me and I have supper to go home to, which is not necessarily true for all of the people I've been interacting with over the course of that day. And the paradox and the mystery of compassion is that even with a hollow belly, I can still come away feeling filled, having chosen to set my annoyance aside and look and listen and provide care for somebody else. In those times, I understand something of what Jesus meant when he said, "My food is to do the will of the one who sent me." Jesus saw the great crowd and had compassion on them. Lunch is important. Boundaries are important. Rest and Sabbath are necessary for faith and for our labor. There are limits to what we can do and limits that must be set around that. This story speaks to that. And please don't write MCC letters. And yet, despite sound policies and my best efforts, there are still afternoons when, like the disciples in Mark's gospel, my plans are disrupted, or I look up from my work and see that it's 2 and I've not been able to stop yet. And I'm sure that despite your best efforts, there will still be days like that for you too. Mark's accounts of Jesus and the crowds here shows us something of Christ's compassion for us. It also invites us to ask, what does it look like for us to respond with compassion in moments like that? Amen.